What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, ready for the return of the Championship. Coming up, the Hatters fits for Wilshire, the Championship is back, and MK are on the march. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And we're back in our Monday slot for you this week. Listen, I hope you've had a good weekend, shorn though it was, of action in the second tier. Still loads for us to talk about today, though. I've got my two podcasting pals with me and ready to go as ever. Hello, Adrian Clark.
Hello. Yeah, all good. All good this end. I went to a new ground and we'll talk about that very shortly, I'm sure. Up to 81 now on the 92, which is really exciting.
Nice. I went to that ground back in 1998 to see Forest and the way things are going. I might be back there to see them again before too long. Sam Parkin's back with us too. How are you, Sam?
Very well. Yeah, quite a nostalgic weekend for me as well. At Plough Lane on Saturday and then at Kingsmeadow to watch Chelsea Women yesterday, where I played the majority of my reserve football and kicked a lot of balls into the next door allotments. So it's always nice to visit Kingsmeadow. Stood in the terracing, which was even more of a throwback and nostalgic. Very nice.
Nice. Could have done with the up front, given the amount of chances they missed. But that's by the by. Before we get stuck into things today, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Okay, we are going to start today with news of a new manager. So Luton Town have got their new gaffer in place and he is Jack Wilshire. The 33-year-old former Arsenal midfielder and Norwich interim is believed to have signed a three-year deal. He brings in Chris Powell as his assistant. And we mentioned this as a possibility last week, Adrian. You'll have followed his career closely, given that he was an Arsenal man for the majority of it. How do you see this from his perspective?
Oh, it's a wonderful opportunity for him. It's a great gig, I think, because I think Luton should... This should be their lowest ebb, mid-table in League One, given where they've been in the last couple of seasons. They absolutely have the clout, the finances, the players to go higher. So I think that he's chosen wisely. He's desperate to be a manager. I think that much is clear. Really hungry. Left a really safe job at Arsenal, you know, looking after the under-18s, to go and try his luck at Norwich, obviously as part of the backroom staff. Had a little taste of it, didn't he, last season? I think he managed the team on a caretaker basis the last two games of the season. 1-1, drew one, so did okay. And then, of course, the big shake-up at Norwich happened and he didn't get the gig. And, yeah, he found himself out of work. But I think if he could have cherry-picked a job, you know, local for him, club he's got a connection to because he was there as a young boy, and a team that, as I say, surely the only way is up. I think this is a win for him. Whether it's a win for Luton, don't know. I don't know whether I would have been brave enough if I was Luton to go with Jack Wilshire, because he's an unproven entity, isn't he? I don't know. The truth is, I never got to see the sort of inside the inner sanctum of what he did with the young players at Arsenal. The bits I've seen, the clips, talking to people, is that he's really well liked by players. They love him, got that credibility. He's passionate, he's a good motivator. It's just, has he got that tactical acumen that maybe you need sometimes? And maybe bringing in Chris Powell, I guess, someone that's seen a lot during his playing days, maybe that will be a really wise appointment on his behalf. So, yeah, wish him the best of luck. I hope Jack Wilshire becomes a brilliant manager, but in the here and now, none of us know whether he's got what it takes. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, loads of time on his hands at 33. And I'm with you, Clarky. I think bringing in Chris Powell is so important. You see so many young coaches just pick somebody of a similar age or experience level to work alongside them. And I always think that's wrong. But it's interesting. We were speaking about people graduating from academy football last week, weren't we? For every Kevin Betsy or Mark Robinson, you've got a Kieran McKenna. Which way is he going to go?
Yeah.
We shall find out. In terms of the club and the fit, Sam, you know Luton having played there. It's obviously a very different place now from them, but what kind of establishment is he taking over?
Well, I think a club at the moment with a huge dark cloud over it. I think that goes for the supporters and the squad of players. I think there's still some players that are reeling from the outcomes of the last two seasons, the ones that remain, probably a slight imbalance in terms of the squad. Some players that haven't produced, haven't been brought in, probably at times last season and definitely in the summer. So players underperforming. So there's no guarantee this is going to be a quick fix. You would imagine, given his schooling, what he was as a player, what I'm sure he's been in his interim period as a coach, he's going to want to play good football. So there may be some short-term pain, I think, for the Luton fans in terms of the results. I think they've clearly looked at it, and it's an appointment to excite, I think, the supporters because of his profile. You get the experience from Chris Powell, maybe, you know, the work without the ball and the structure of the team and the experience that he'll bring in that regard. And he brings enormous profile, which Matt Bloomfield didn't have, but Matt Bloomfield had a lot more experience as a number one than Jack Wilshere. So I would imagine they're just going to see if having a bigger name, if you like, inspires some of the players, a bit of an aura around him. Because you can't deny that, you know, Matt Bloomfield showed at Colchester really good signs, and again at Wickham. And I don't think I touched on this last week. If you look at the actual record, and I know it's Luton with the expectation, yeah, I think it's a slight raw deal for Bloomfield, given that they haven't been beaten too many times this season. It's not a disaster sitting in mid-table, but obviously the expectation's huge, and continuity in terms of the decline across the last few seasons has been really evident. So, yeah, probably right place, wrong time for Matt Bloomfield. I'm sure he'll come again. But I'm really excited for a lot of the reasons that Clarkey said, because my only frustration with Jack Wilshere is because of injury, he didn't go on and become what he should have done as a player, which is a fantastic talent. I love listening to him talk when he's done the radio, and he clearly loves football, and we should champion these guys who want to be managers rather than, you know, doing the odd turn on TV and playing in the Vets once every few months. So good luck, but I think it's a tough challenge in the interim period.
Yeah, quite the contrast as well in the dugouts on Saturday. Home to Mansfield is his first game going up against Nigel.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He should definitely pull him afterwards, win, lose, or draw, and have a chat. Yeah, look, I think the tempo of the work will be really important. It'll be high intensity. You know, he's played in teams that have had good standards under Arsene Wenger, and he's watched Mikel Arteta a lot. I know that. Taking quite a lot of inspiration from him. So, yeah, I think he, as Sam touched on, he will have slight regrets about his playing career. Didn't maybe fulfil his massive potential, even though he was, you know, England international and was brilliant. And if it's anything like me, like I had that feeling for different reasons. And in this second career, I've worked harder, I think, to try and make a success of it. I would imagine he is going to work his absolute socks off. He's going to throw everything at this because it's a really big job for him. So, yeah, I think Luton will have someone that's dedicated and passionate and that the players will like. So I hope it worked out for him.
Yeah, good luck to him. And, yeah, interesting first game, as we say, coming up on Saturday. That can lead us nicely into our mini review of the weekend. We'll start in League One. Adrian was at Edgeley Park on Saturday for the first time to see Stockport squeeze past managerless Blackpool and move up to fourth in the table in the process. Is squeeze past a fair assessment, Clarkey?
Oh, it was squeaky at the end. I mean, the issue Stockport have had this season is that they've thrown away too many leads, like loads of leads. They often take, you know, score the first goal, and they haven't converted enough of those into 3 points. And they got the lead here in the second half, completely deserved. They were brilliant in the first half, not so good after the break, but they got the lead. And oh my goodness, I mean, Sam will have seen this 1,000 times with teams. You'd have played in them, watched them. They just stopped playing. Everything that they'd done to get the lead, they just sort of threw it away and thought, let's not lose our lead. And they just became preoccupied by it, and it allowed a pretty mediocre Blackpool team to get a foothold in the game. And by the end, the feeling within Stockport's stadium, first visit, like you say, really enjoyed it, was relief. They were breathing a big sigh of relief that they got the 3 points. It should have been 3 or 4, really, in truth. In the first half, I was massively impressed by the energy, the tempo. The midfield duo of Ollie Norwood and Odin Bailey were magnificent. Norwood, I've never seen a player, for a long time actually, I've never seen a player run a game like he did in this match. He everything went through through Norwood, who was pinging pass after pass to the flanks, whether it was to the right, to the left. It was diagonal central, and he looked $1 million, I've got to say. I thought they created some great chances. That Jack Diamond was really busy in a sort of left 10 role. The left wing back was great, Ben Osborne. You know him from obviously time at Derby. He was up
and Forest,
down.
Former Forest player of the year. Thank you very much.
Okay, we forget
about his time at Derby.
Right that off, and then and the back three, you know, really solid with Pye and Hills and Alowu, who got the goal. So I said before the game, I said during the commentary, I fully expect Stockport to be in the mix for top two. And definitely playoffs. And the only thing that will change my mind is this habit at the moment of getting nervous when they're in front. Because I still think they've got the players, they've got the manager, they've got this style of play that's going to make them a force to be reckoned with most times they play. So yeah, it was they should really have won it by more. They were a level above Blackpool, really. Who I think from their end, they'll just come away from it and say, well, second half was better. We showed some fight. We showed some pride. That's something to build on. But yeah, in the main, they looked like a side that are going to be struggling this season.
Still waiting for news on who is going to be the replacement for Steve Bruce. They'll probably announce it just as I hit publish on the podcast, just like Watford did last week. Right, Sam saw Wimbledon held to a draw by Port Vale at Plough Lane. Pints rather than professionalism, the order of the day for parking here, which leads me to ask Sam, at Plough Lane, are we talking your standard football grounds? You can have a pint of Madry or a pint of John Smith's, or given that it's South London, was it a small batch brewed hazy IPA?
Madry and John Smith's you gone for? God, that's an upgrade from the plastic bottles of Heineken you get Loftus Road. I was with my children here, Matt. Don't start casting this burden.
Irresponsible.
Yeah, that's with my children here. I had a latte in the food court fan zone. Come on. No, there was definitely a pale ale on offer in the bar, actually, upstairs in the inner sanctum of the AFC Wimbledon Stadium. But yeah, there is some kind of craft beer available as well outside, where you can get all manner of snacks. So really good fun. If you do live in the south or in the London area, you should get along to a game, because it's brilliant pre-match. Loads going on. It's a great ground. I took some dear friends of mine at the weekend, who I've known since I was knee high, and they loved it. Absolutely loved it with their children. They were just happy to have a little bit more space on the concourse than you actually do get at Loftus Road, which was obviously our upbringing. So children really enjoyed it. The game was really good second half. Port Vale hugely impressed me. Really good side. And you only have to look at the results. 5 defeats in their first 7. They're 3 wins and 2 draws in their subsequent 5. So they're one of the form sides in the division. They really pinned Wimbledon in the opening 45. I like the midfield 3. Crosdale, Byers, Garrity. Good experience in there. 2 outside centre-halves joined in quite often. Deborah on the right-hand side and Connor Hall on the left-hand side, who's been around the block. He actually was on the ball to deliver for the equalising goal when it eventually came. But they should have been in front in the first half. There was one brilliant clearance from Jake Reeves, Wimbledon's captain, when there was a bit of an overload. They broke and it looked like it was a certain goal, and he was able to intervene. And the front two of Devante Cole and George Hall, the Birmingham loanee who was at Walsall last year, if you remember, towards the tail end of the season, he was excellent. I mean, really sprightly, athletic, sharp, good quality on the ball as well. So he was a constant menace. Didn't get the goal. And Wimbledon, as it so often happens, just flew out the traps in the second half, and it was a completely different game. They, I don't think, had probably got up to the ball and pressed as they would have wanted to in the first half. The line was higher. They were in the opposition's faces, and they were completely transformed after the break. And they get the goal through the substitute, Antoine Hackford, who's a lad they signed on a free from Sheffield United, who ironically was on loan at Port Vale last season. He came on for Dan Orsi, who'd scored 2 last week against Blackpool, but he had 12 touches in the game in 67 minutes, Orsi. So he was really peripheral alongside Bougill. But Hackford came on, scored the goal. But in truth, Port Vale finished the stronger, and Jacko and his staff would have been absolutely thrilled had they held on for 3 points. But the reality is that Port Vale absolutely deserved a share of the spoils. But two good teams. And yeah, I think the most pertinent thing from the Wimbledon perspective is no Joe Lewis, no Ryan Johnson, no Hippolyte, no Matty Stevens. I think if you put Reeves into that five, that's the five most integral players at Wimbledon, four of them missing at the weekend. So I think at 2 o'clock, when the teams went in, Wimbledon would have shook hands on the point and gone home nice and merry. But really good game, good second half, and two teams that have adapted to third-tier football brilliantly.
Sure have, yeah. And congratulations to Johnny Jackson and his coaching staff, who signed new contracts to 2027 last week. In League Two, meanwhile, I remember not long ago, we were on the verge of sounding the crisis klaxon for MK Dons and Paul Warne after they lost at home to Accrington. Since then, they've won three in a row. Coincidence? Yeah. On Saturday, no neutrals other team won 4-0 at Bristol Rovers, an early OG and three late on getting the job done for the Dons. Is this the inevitable clicking that we thought might happen a bit quicker than Adrian?
I think it probably is. Like you say, I remember slamming them after that defeat to Accrington Stanley, saying that was embarrassing. And they've responded, haven't they? Not to me, but to the manager, to that situation brilliantly, with three straight wins, scoring goals. Obviously, there's a big win against Gillingham chucked in there as well, which shouldn't be dismissed, where they scored three goals. So, yeah, they're finding their feet, aren't they? And this, even though there were three late goals, which has kind of been a bit of a thing for MK Dons this season, that they deserved it. I mean, they had seven shots on target. Bristol Rovers had one. I think the shot count was 13-6 to them as well. And Darryl Clark was fuming with his team, just said it was a poor performance from beginning to end, that they were outplayed. And that's how I saw it as well. MK Dons had five big chances in the game, and the Gas didn't have a single one. Although when I watched some of the game back, it did have a pretty clear header inside the 6-yard box that probably should have been buried from Harrison. But that aside, they didn't really offer up much. I think what we're seeing here is a really balanced team now, a team that's starting to click. You had Patterson and Mendes Lang as a front two. Obviously, you can't really play Callum Patterson, I don't think, these days on his own up front. You need a bit of support around him, and Mendes Lang has got that athleticism, hasn't he? So that looks right to me. I think having a midfield three works, with Liam Kelly sort of orchestrating with two runners either side in Collar and Gilby, who's got four goals now this season. Was involved in a couple of the ones at the weekend. But I think the one that really stands out, and for me, the performance was Liam Kelly. Ever since that playoff semi-final, he was virtually unplayable. He's always a player that I look out for, and he's had a poor start to the season, but he's now firing, and he created four chances in the game. It was a really clever, quickly taken training ground free kick that he played into Gilby for his goal. Yeah, he ran the game really with it, and without it, unbelievable. Some of the numbers, I think he won six or seven duels. He regained possession 12 times in the game, which is outstanding. So yeah, it just feels like this collection of individuals are starting to find a team. And that's Paul Warne's job, isn't it? How do you find a team and a style that suits sort of a motley crew of really talented individuals that are sort of stellar names at League Two level, but not many of them have been accustomed to playing Warne ball. And I think that Warne ball is having to be modified a little bit here. You know, you can't just go, I'm not saying he just booms it, but you can't just go direct all the time with the talent that they've got. So he's finding that mix. I think in this game, both teams went pretty direct. But yeah, the quality of the individuals that MK Dons have mean that they will be there or thereabouts, in my opinion, this season. And the fact that they're now fourth, 1 point off the automatics, having thrown so many games away, where they were poor, is ominous, really. So yeah, you'd have to fancy them to get into the top three. And maybe get the job done.
And lots of similarities, I think, between MK Dons and Colchester, who are another team we were fretting over a couple of weeks ago. They eased our/their fears by following up that 6-2 thrashing of Chesterfield with a 2-1 win at Grimsby, Micah Mbick, the Charlton loanee, got both following on from his goal in the trophy against Gillingham in midweek. Impressive victory this, Sam, particularly given that they restricted Grimsby to just two shots on target after they put seven past Cheltenham in their previous home game.
Yeah, definitely. I think this was the result that caught my eye. One, because they had to back up that thumping win over Chesterfield. But, you know, I think Grimsby are never going to have a better opportunity of promotion. They're a really good side. So to win and win in this manner, yeah, it must be hugely satisfying to Danny Cowley. I mean, three wins in a week now, one in the Football League trophy as well. They'd won 3 in 12, all competitions, and just one clean sheet, I think, in the league prior to Saturday. So I think they've turned the corner. They deserve to win this game. You just mentioned that. They limited Grimsby to very little. I think they hit the woodwork late on, but it was an away performance. And I think I said it about Crewe last time out. I think that, you know, Grimsby probably prefer to play teams that are a bit more expansive, if you like, and Colchester, you know, likewise, I think are going to get a little bit of joy against teams that open up somewhat. And I think that's probably what happened here, that they exploited them a little bit. And then Bick, 18 years old, the first one's a really scrappy goal from a set piece, but the second's a beautiful touch and finish. There was a strong argument from the Grimsby perspective that it was a high boot, but, you know, I credit the centre forward and enjoyed seeing it waved away, and the finish is sublime. So I spoke about maybe that lack of a focal point for Colchester last time we spoke of them. He looks to be a terrific acquisition on loan. Teddy Bishop, the standout in this game, with him, Arthur Reed, Jack Payne, they should be running games in League Two. And I think Payne returning to full fitness has been one of the catalysts behind this upturn. Obviously got a hat trick last time out. Iandolo, the former Swindon fullback at left back, he's a massive player for them. He's back in the side now. So I think all the stars are just aligning, settled 11, a little bit of confidence and a bit of the housery to go with it as well in this game. I think a bit of running the clock down, a little bit of rolling around, which you need, and which, you know, Colchester will have if they're, you know, going to be successful this season, I think, and going up against teams that are tough to play at against because of their patterns are quite sophisticated and the type of football they're playing is very, very good at Grimsby. So standout result, and yeah, fully expect Colchester to kick on from here.
Yeah, they are 16th in the table, but only 6 points off the playoffs, which is where Grimsby currently reside. All right, high time we got to some Championship chat. And we're back in Tier 2 on Friday night, and you have to say it's quite the way to get things going again. Inform Ipswich go to not that inform anymore, Middlesbrough. Clarkey, Borough-wise, no wins in 3, only one win in 5, no goals in their last 2. Is this a worrying downturn or a regression to the mean?
Look, they're going to be involved in tight games, aren't they? Unless they improve the attack and start finding the right formula, then they're always at risk of dropping points because you need to score 2 or 3 to win most matches. I went to this match years and years ago, one of the best hat-tricks I've ever seen from Daly and Atkinson, the late Daly and Atkinson. What a hat-trick. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. Anyway, I digress. This game, I think, will be tight. Borough are in really tight games. There's an argument to say that they might be the best team out of possession in the league. I still think the goal in, I don't have a go at Solbring because he's doing well, he's having a good season, but I do think that maybe that's a position they might upgrade in due course. But the back three, which now contains Luke Ayling, of course, has been converted to a centre half. Alfie Jones is in there, who's come in and done well. Back three's really solid. The two wing backs, terrific. Matt Target on the left. Callum Britton has been just taken to that team, that shape perfectly. And then Hackney and Morris in midfield. Those eight, sorted. It's what he does at the front. And if you look at the team selections from Rob Edwards, it's a different configuration most weeks. He's absolutely searching for it. You know, he's got a number of new players in there, Strelec and Sine, and he got Conway and Whitaker. There's loads of different ones, and he's not quite sure what the best combo is. And until they hit on it, they're just not going to score enough goals, are they? That, for me, to stay at the top end. But yeah, they've sat on that one 3-0 loss at Pompey, haven't they, for a couple of weeks? So there'll be a bit of determination to put it right. But it's a tough fixture, isn't it? Arguably the toughest fixture they're going to have this season. Just on their attack numbers wise, it's the only Derby and Charlton have got a lower XG this season. So that's the area. But the other end, XG against, that's the quality of chances you give up. They are the best in the division. Ipswich, interestingly, are the second best. So maybe we should expect a relatively low scoring affair here. But they'll set out to make it hard for Ipswich to break them down, and then they'll look to pick them off, won't they, on breakaways. I'm sure that's how it'll be. Funnily enough, for two managers that we've been talking about for years and years, two, you know, talented young managers, the two hot shots really that took Luton and took Ipswich into the Premier League, Rob Edwards and Kieran McKenna, I can't find a match where they've met. I think this is the first time that they've met as managers, which is nuts, really. They just haven't crossed paths with the various teams that they've worked at. So, interesting to see who comes out on top here.
Yeah, probably will be tight if it goes to form. Borough unbeaten at home in the league, 1-3 or 4, but all by the odd goal. Sam, you and Adrian both tipped Ipswich to win the league on last week's show. Kind of opposite to Borough, aren't they? And that they didn't start great, but they've improved since then to the extent that Kieran McKenna was named Manager of the Month for September. Win here would take him into the playoff places.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, that, wasn't it? Not looked too intently at what the other runners and riders would have been there, but yeah, it felt like that was a bit kind, maybe, because I think there's better days to come and even more consistency. Absolutely, they are improving and improving quickly, and you know, away from home, obviously, it's been a little contrast into what they've been churning out at Portman Road. So they need to improve in that regard. If you think they lost at Preston and were likely to lose at Blackburn as well before the heavens opened, they'll need an improved performance here. But yeah, I concur. I think this is low scoring. I quite fancy the draw here. I think that Friday night at Middlesbrough will enthuse the crowd and they'll have to conquer that and be good with the ball. But I said on last week's pod, they've got the best player in the division at the moment in Philogene. I think there's less of a reliance on Leif Davis, and that kind of lopsided nature of Ipswich's attacking play. I think you get probably a little bit more from the right back now in Furlong. I think West Brom, to their detriment, having lost his ability to get up the pitch and cross balls, obviously the long throw will probably see utilised as well. So I think this is a different Ipswich this season with a little bit more balance across the piece. And you've got Kipray, who's deputising for Greaves at the moment. He's come in and done really well. I think you see Kieran McKenna particularly kind of select central defenders for that matchup, what they're going to be playing up against, and maybe Greaves comes back in for this one. I can't think that, you know, you're going to need the power probably and the aggressive nature of Kipre's defending against Middlesbrough's front line. I think they're a more technical front line, so I think we'll see that to chop and change throughout the season, depending on who the opponents are. But yeah, I think this is an Ipswich team that's improving every game. Matsuwawu in midfield as well, getting better with the games that he's having. And yeah, I think they're good for a draw at least here. And as we heavily tipped last week, I think Ipswich are going to climb the table and fast.
Right, so that's Friday night. We've got a rare thing in the Championship this weekend. Leicester City and Portsmouth meet at the King Power Stadium, 7:45 on a Saturday night. Leicester Tigers are playing in what some would call the sport of rugby. They're at home in the afternoon, hence the change in kickoff time. I'm going to be commentating on this one for Leicester, so I'm looking forward to it. They start the weekend, Clarkey, in third. Their win at Swansea pre-break came off the back of four straight draws. They haven't lost since August, but I love that. When a team's drawn a few and then they win one, you go from they can't buy a win to they're on a really good unbeaten run at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a bit like MK Dons in League Two. Haven't really got going, but fourth. And you'd say that about Leicester. And they're there or thereabouts, aren't they? I think the 3-1 win at Swansea, they have to view that as the game changer, because it was a much better performance. It was much more dangerous. They looked a proper team against a half-decent Swans outfit as well. Yes, two of the goals were unreal, scorchers, and that's what won them the game. But I think overall the feeling was that Martí Cifuentes is starting to find his team. And I expect if everyone's fit and available, it's going to be really, it'll almost be their strongest available side, I think, Leicester. So I think Deco Dover-Reed might drop out and Aaron Ramsey will come in. And it'll be Ramsey and Jordan James as the two runners in midfield with Harry Winks in between them. And that, to me, is good. It's very potent. And I think on home turf, that unit can absolutely dominate Portsmouth. The wingers, Jeremy Monger on the left, the teenage whiz kid. The fans love him. I think he'll be in for Mavadidi. And Fatawu, for me, Fatawu is in the top three players in the championship. He has to be. He's a real, just such a talent, and he can win games on your own. Got to say, Leicester's, there's not a lot wrong with Leicester's team. I still don't really trust the centre backs, but at championship level, they're fine. It's just up front. What are they going to do? At the moment, it's Patson Daka, but none of the fans like Patson Daka. Ayew has played a lot of football there, but no one really thinks he's a striker. And then they've signed Carranza, the guy in the summer, and he's only really been seen in snippets, a 10-minute here, 15 minutes there. We're not sure whether he's up to it or not. So, yeah, they really do need to sort of decide on a striker. Yeah, I just think this game actually might not suit Leicester because they'll have loads of the ball. I think they're better when they have a little bit less of it, where they can have a little bit of space to run into. So it'll be a challenge for them. Can they go and play with as much swashbuckle as they did at Swansea if they have 65, 70% of the ball? That is the challenge. I think Cifuentes has to set them here, because I can't see a world where Pompey don't try and sit in and frustrate them. So, yeah, interesting matchup. So, yeah, can they maintain what they did in Wales? That's the big question.
First time these two teams have met since New Year's Eve 2011, comes just a few weeks after their passing of Milan Mandrić, who owned Leicester as well at Portsmouth, of course. Pompey, Sam, can we get through a chat about them without linking John Messinio to another job, I wonder?
I know. There's not any championship gigs going at the moment, is there? Can't think off the top of my head. It'll continue to get linked if they've got, kind of that distance between themselves and the bottom three, because I think if it's not a relegation battle this season for Portsmouth, rightly you'll get load of plaudits if they can consolidate in the middle of the table, because that'll be a job really well done. I think when you look at last season and obviously the budget in comparison to other teams, I think they're up against it at the moment. That said, that was a brilliant win against Middlesbrough. I'm sure they were thrilled with that, because you've got Lang out, who's been out long term, you've got Shaughnessy now, you've got the goalkeeper Schmidt, you got injured in the derby at Southampton, and more important than any of those aforementioned players, you've got Murphy out at the moment. So there's a bit of a lack of pace, certainly athleticism without him and Lang. They're their two kind of runners, aren't they? You can get them up the pitch. Pace, brilliant delivery that Murphy possesses. And you're having to play slightly different with Chaplin was off one of the sides the other day. Yang, who's coming from Spurs, who has got a little bit, in the 1v1 situation. So he'll probably be the one that's got a break beyond Colby Bishop. He's got two in his three starts. Segicic, again, looks like a lovely footballer, but he's not searing pace. So maybe they just have to, just box a little bit different at the moment. And I'm with Clarkey. I think they're a really good side when they sit in and frustrate the big sides away from home. You just have to look at the results this season, a point at the Hawthorns, 0-0 at Southampton and lost by the old goal at Ipswich, although that scoreline probably flattered them a little bit. So, yeah, it's how they find a way to be a threat on the break without those players, how they can service Bishop a little bit better. He's only got one goal so far, which is passed me by a little bit, because you always think he's going to be good for, in any side, probably a dozen, 15 across a campaign. So a few issues for them going into this one, but I think they'll be delighted with the start of the season, and I probably see it being edged by the odd goal. And unfortunately for Pompey, you'd have to make the home side clear favourites.
We shall see. Sandwiching the Friday night and Saturday night offerings is a tasty South London derby at Loftus Road. Saturday lunchtime, QPR taking on Millwall. Just a point between these two sides in the table. QPR in the final playoff place. And an abject lesson for everybody, Sam, in how you respond to a defeat. We spoke about it with MK Dons, but Rangers haven't lost since that 7-1 shellacking at Coventry. And that was quite a long time ago now, August to be specific. And it's not just that they've been grinding out results, right? In the, what, six games since then, they've won four of them.
No, it's been incredible, really, the turnaround. And I think, you know, the most simplistic way to put it is, I think Julien Stéphan came in with an idea of how he wanted his team to play. And obviously the manner of the goals that they conceded, I think, in the Coventry defeat and the prior one, has meant that he's had to have a rethink. And you know, they've got real potency at the top end of the pitch, real pace, real goal threat. I think that's, you know, underlined by a lot of the attacking kind of metrics and numbers. They're not having much of the ball. Didn't have loads of it last season, but they certainly tried to play a little bit more possession football last year under Marty Cifuentes, and he's just stripped that back this year. And I think everyone's really enjoying it. It's not, you know, being booted up the pitch, but it's being played forward quickly with a purpose. I think in terms of individuals, Madsen, the midfield player, who was very much maligned last season or since he joined, he had a couple of little sporadic performances where he was half decent, but he's been brilliant in central midfield. He's actually able to change the two midfielders from the previous draw with Oxford for the most recent win at Bristol City. So there's real strength there as well when you think of Sato, Dembele, Vale, Smith, wide options, Poku and Chair not involved at the moment because of injury. So, you know, that's a really good, you know, looking array of a forward talent. And then you got Burrell and Kone have just come in and hit the ground running. And yeah, Kone is, I wouldn't say he's getting an abundance of opportunities, but I think he's 4-4 at the moment. He's looking like he's going to score every time he goes onto the pitch. So yeah, completely revitalised. Even in that 0-0 against Oxford, I think I said it last week, I watched the entirety of that game and normally I would have switched off, but I always felt that there was a potential goal coming. And I think that's the difference. It's kind of, it's front foot, it's exciting. They look like they're confident, the players. So it should be another good game, this. Millwall off the back of that West Brom win, a little bit of inconsistency, but I just had a little quick look and the lineup from that game, Clarke is going to come on to, it looks like they're starting to get, you know, the majority of their squad back fit, good options, be a good atmosphere and a really, really good looking game to get excited about.
Yeah, he's right, isn't he, Adrian, about Millwall in terms of selection. Sam, Alex Neil said that West Brom game, they won 3-0 before the break, was the first time he'd been able to pick something close to his starting 11. The championship's so relentless, isn't it? A lot of other teams, I guess, are in the same position, but it's a bit of mitigation that maybe we don't offer up enough for managers when they're not getting results.
Yeah, that is fair. Yeah, it's not our issue. It's not our problem, is it, when they've got these injury issues? But it does look like a lot of the guys are back. And yeah, when I looked at that 11 that beat West Brom 3-0, what a result that was, by the way, and a really good performance as well. It does look strong, particularly in midfield. Billy Mitchell, I think, had a great game, and alongside him was Luongo with Smallbone, Will Smallbone in front. And Smallbone, when he was in the championship last time with Southampton, was tremendous. And I think that the way he gets forward, drives the team up the pitch, is going to be really important around Coburn. They've got quite exciting wingers, haven't they? Femi Aziz is playing all right. Scored a brilliant goal in that game before the international break. On the left back had a blinder the other day, Zach Sturge. Great goal from him. Full length for the pitch breakaway. Yeah, there's just a bit more experience. I think beyond, if you take two or three of the more experienced players out of this Millwall team, you're looking at kids, and that, I think, is the big difference. I think if all of those are available this weekend, they'll fancy it at QPR. They haven't actually lost away from home yet, which I think is pretty impressive. They haven't played anyone that's currently, I think, sat in the top half, but they won at Sheffield United, which is a great result. They won at Norwich, which isn't always easy, and they drew at Swansea and Charlton already. So yeah, haven't really tasted defeat. To be honest, you look at the teams that they have lost to, and they've been bad defeats at the New Den. Coventry spanked them, Borough spanked them. That's the top two, and the other defeat was Wrexham. And you know, I think that on their day, they're capable of beating most teams as well. So yeah, Millwall are going to be tough to beat this season, and I think they'll be tough to beat this weekend as well. So yeah, tight London derby, full of aggression. And I think with Millwall, it doesn't really matter who's wearing the shirt. When they're aggressive, when they're fired up, they're always a nightmare to play against. And I'm sure they will be for this game.
Yeah, there's a reason this is scheduled for a 12:30 kickoff, and it's not just so that we can enjoy it on TV, I'm sure. All right, we are approaching the end of today's show. I tell you what, we're not going to spend long on predictions this week because nobody got any points whatsoever.
It's embarrassing.
Last week. I mean, it is absolutely dismal. So let's get back on the horse and back to form this week, shall we? Sam, I'm going to let you kick us off. Stoke against Wrexham is our first pick. What's going to happen?
I need to make up some distance, and I quite fancy it. So a slight curveball, 0-1.
Ooh, a great win. Like it. Wrexham in decent form. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Adrian?
Yeah, let's mix it all up. Let's all go something different. At least one of us will get a point. home win, Stoke 2, Wrexham 1. Stoke, bit off to boil, but I think they're going to come good here. 2-1.
All right, you can go first on the League One game that I picked. It is a Yorkshire derby, Bradford against Barnsley. Who are you picking?
For Barnsley, yeah. 5 from 5, aren't they, Bradford, at home. But it's not going to be 6 from 6, I don't think. Goals, always see goals in Bradford games. I think Barnsley can get something here in quite an exciting derby. So let's go Bradford 2, Barnsley 2.
Sam, has he taken the score right out of your mouth?
But you know what? I haven't got the knowledge on this one, but when was the last time there was 5 Yorkshire teams in the third division? Because we seem to be doing this every week, really. I thought, I'm sure they'd played each other. But they've played Donny, I think, and Huddersfield in recent weeks, Bradford. But 5 from Yorkshire? Someone do it, please.
It's a Northern League, isn't it, this year? Yeah,
I seem to be thinking that when, like, like checking Wimbledon's fixtures and they're off somewhere to the northwest or to Yorkshire every fortnight, it would seem. I'm more than happy to take the Bradford home win here, and I'll take it at a bit of a canter as well. 2-0. Comfortable.
Okay, I'm going to go for a home win as well, but I think it's going to be 3-1 to Bradford. That leaves me with first pick of, is this a derby? Salford Oldham? We don't have time for this. I'm going to say that this is going to be a drab affair and a 0-0 draw. What say you, Adrian?
Yeah, I feel drabness, definitely. I think it's because it's older that they're not involved in very many high-scoring games. Salford have secretly fallen off, haven't they? Three losses in a row for Salford City. I'm going to say it's going to be a 4th because Oldham have already picked up a couple of clean sheet wins on the road. I'm going to go Salford 0, Oldham 1.
Okay, under 2.5 goals, the theme here, I fancy. What do you reckon, Sam?
What did you have, Matt? Apologies.
I had a 0-0 draw.
As the crow flies, and I'm sure some Latics fans would correct me on this, but Rochdale would be the closest to Oldham in terms of a derby. I'm sure there's some other ones they got beef with. I think Salford win here, courtesy of the odd goal. 1-0, Salford.
Okay. Right, we'll let you know how we get on with that next week. Hopefully better than we did last week. Before we go, one more reminder for the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org. For information on responsible gambling. We do, of course, have a tweet of the week to finish. It comes from Jude Arthurs of Bromley, who hit a landmark at the weekend as he made his 200th appearance for the club in the 1-0 win away to Crewe. He is quote tweeting the official account, which said, "A special day for Jude," muscly arm emoji with a picture of him with a graphic, 200 appearances, Jude Arthurs. Jude simply says, "Delighted to hit 200 appearances. And what a 3 points, ! We go again, ! Praise emoji, fist emoji. It's just ticking all the boxes, Sam. This, isn't it? Basically, we go again. What a 3 points. Fist emoji. Just textbook stuff.
Well, it's, in my opinion, it's 100% a landmark that should be marked by him. But there's an opportunity there for a little bit more, I think, I would suggest. You know, tell us about those years, those 200 appearances, what it's meant to get there, because it's a fine achievement. I never got anywhere near it, given how my career's tailed off at various clubs and I was shipped off to other gaffs.
He's only 24 as well. It's genuinely impressive, right?
Yeah, he's done really well. And he's a good little player as well. I've seen him on a few occasions. Neat and tidy, bit of versatility about him as well. The We Go Again, we know, is just the, this is, again, and I'm repetitive on this front, is why we started this this little feature. It's got no place in any kind of tweet. We don't want to see it, We Go Again. And it's had its time, and that this is a poor moment to see this be aired once again. So disappointing, but the sentiment, fine, but poor delivery.
All right, so we don't go again with We Go Again. Always like to dip into the replies, Clarkie. Keen to get your opinion on this. Mark says, looking forward to the next 100. JT says, 200 more, please. Should he be going in 100 in terms of his rounding up, or are we just doubling it up?
I think in this context, considering he's 24, you know, he's to the next 200, really. I think he's capable of reaching it, isn't he? No doubt about that. Sam stole my thunder a little bit. Touched on it. What I would have done here, and I'm not saying I'm a great social media presence, but on the 200 to mark it, I would go best game, best feeling, funniest moment. Like, just you got an excuse here to rattle off three or four tweets or posts on the trot, just to give the punter something to reminisce about. Love it. And then you can even have a little bit of interaction in terms of, I don't think that was the best win. This one was, mate. Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that's an opportunity missed. So he's going to have to wait 100 games at least now. I suppose you could do it after 250, could you? I don't know.
Matt, you see now Clark, he's on fire on YouTube. Just, you can see the creative juice just flowing out of him. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, look, I'm here for footballers. If you know, I can be a consultant, you can pay me loads of money and I'll give you some ideas. Yeah, it's all fine.
I might have, just because it's only the second time he'd done the full 90 in the league this season, so Gaffer even kept me on till the end, winking face emoji or something. Bit of fun maybe to finish, but there you go. Well done to Jude. Anyway, that is where we're going to leave things for today. Hey, by the way, if you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, all helps us grow the show, as does just telling somebody we are here. We would surely appreciate it. But for now, my thanks go to Sam, to Adrian, and to you for joining us. We'll be back with another one next week. For now, though, it's goodbye.